5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy Sunday, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy Anelli right here with you once again. Angel Santana, Have Faith, Let It Begin. How are you, my friend?
I'm excited. The sun has been finally out and it's getting warmer and warmer. Woo, woo, woo. Let's go, Croc Nation.
I think we cracked 32 this week, didn't we?
That's why I'm excited. Hey, it's a heat wave.
Oh my God. We have to get our plants planted and our grass done. And it's just really not cooperating.
Absolutely. But you know what? When the Croc Podcast is on the air, the sun shines.
You got it. So it's going to be a great episode. We're going to continue with our module on computer science for the cancer survivor. And it's very apropos, actually, that we're going to be talking about telemedicine today for our survivors. And it just so happens, you just happened to share with me that your parents now are, you know, down with coronavirus for the second time, I believe you told me.
No, first time.
First time. And, you know, I wanted to say that I've been praying very hard for them, but there's a different feel to coronavirus now than there was. I mean, it's still, you're fearful and you don't want anything bad to happen, but you almost feel like it's a different sort of situation than it was in March of 2020. And that's what we're going to kind of talk about, because I remember going in February of 2020. It was a
2020.
And it almost sounds like, it feels like it was 15 years ago, right? But it was only two and a half years ago. But I remember in February, and we were starting to get, things were trickling about the coronavirus, and it was hitting China and other different areas like Italy and Europe, and things didn't really get so bad. So in February, I went out to Arizona for a conference. And basically, when I came back, that was the last time we did anything for over a year. Everything just shut down. And more than that, it was a real, I want to say, terrifying experience, especially people in the healthcare system where you had to go to work every day and you really didn't know if you were going to get it and if you were going to live. It was almost like being in a war, you know, and we were sort of in a war. And I think you felt the same way.
Oh, without a doubt. It literally felt I was... You know, this sounds like a cliche, but I felt like I was in a bad dream.
Exactly. And you would agree that it was a scary time. There were people, you know, at first they tried to tell you that it was only elderly people that were getting sick. And then you started hearing people in their 60s and their 50s and their 40s and their 30s and their 20s that were dying. And people, there was every day we got told how many respirators were being used and how many we had. And then the governor would get on the TV and, you know, tell everybody how he was going to mobilize, you know, respirators. And this was happening right in front of us. And every time we would get a chill or you felt a little bit warm, we would run to take our temperature. And we were so terrified. I use that word again, you know, that was going to be us. And there were people just dying everywhere, nursing homes, hospitals, at home. And we all know someone who was killed, you know, by this terrible virus. And then the entire medical system came to a halt. So all elective medical care, so whether it be oncology or otherwise, people just stopped going to the doctors. They just stopped getting, if, you know, you had an abnormality and a mammogram and they recommended a 6-month follow-up. You know, one of our board members actually, that was what happened with her. She basically had a somewhat abnormal mammogram and she was due for a follow-up and they delayed it by 6 months because of the fact that it was coronavirus. Nobody wanted to go into do an elective process or procedure or test. Nobody wanted to go into the hospital. Nobody wanted to move from their house. And, you know, just routine surveillance, care, follow-up of abnormalities, it just came to a halting stop. And then all of a sudden, the trumpets started blaring, the guns started shooting, the cavalry came down from the hill with all those beautiful horses, and telemedicine was really, I don't want to say born, because we had been using some telemedicine, but it really, really changed the game. And I bet you would agree with that.
Absolutely. I can recall when I had contracted coronavirus in the September of 2020. And at one point I was so fearful that my daughter had it. And, you know, we called up and we were doing, you know, literally a telehealth over my cell phone, and they're evaluating her through a phone. And it was just surreal because I wasn't about to bring her there and they weren't about to touch her. It was crazy.
Absolutely crazy. There was no home tests. You know, people were drinking bleach and taking all sorts of weird remedies, and oh, just crazy. And all of a sudden, you know, the processes of industry just started rebooting, and you know, the machinery started going, and telemedicine. And I want to just say, telemedicine was not easy at first. There was a huge learning curve. There still is a learning curve. It's very uncomfortable to get to do what we're doing right now and just talking on the computer. It's kind of awkward as opposed to being face to face. And also even audio, it's not much better. You know, we're used to telephone conversations and we're kind of more, I guess, accustomed to that sort of mode, but not easy either talking to somebody you barely know, right? So your doctor. But slowly but surely, it got better and better and better. You know, there were some horror stories. Do you remember the episode we did about the patient who I first did a telemedicine because of coronavirus? Didn't really get to know her very well. And then everybody had masks on. And, you know, it wasn't the same sort of, you know, connection that we got in, you know, in the old days where you got to know the person and know a lot about them and their family. And for this person, I really didn't get to know them. I didn't see them a couple of times on a Monday on our doctor day. And before you knew it, she was done with her treatments and she had absolutely the worst experience because of the telemedicine, which kind of set the stage where everything just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I'm sure I'll never see her again, and good for her. I don't think she should. You know, you don't want to, you know, have someone who have such a bad experience, just, you know, you can't turn that off. You can't take that back. That's on us. So, you know, telemedicine has some great stuff and things we're going to talk about. What do we do, Angel? We point out obstacles. We view them as challenges and we overcome them. So that's what we're going to do today when we talk about telemedicine. What do you think about that?
I think it's a great idea. And I think, you know, for somebody myself, I've experienced the good and the bad. And we'll even say ugly because we've done that here and with telemedicine. But you know, here's the beauty of all this. There is some beauty of it. We were all dealing with it together. That's very unlikely. People have to stop and think on a global scale. We were all on the same page, meaning scared, trying something different, trying to reinvent the wheel of a wheel that already existed, but we didn't realize how important it was needed when it was time.
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted to just, you know, now bring it to where we are now. Things are changing. You know, the world is opening up again. You know, airlines are flying, countries are opening up their gates. As a matter of fact, I heard that even masks are not mandatory anymore in many places, even in airplanes, airports. I will be wearing my mask, but that doesn't mean that it's everyone will be. So it's things are starting to get back to normal. But I did want to say that just because that's happening, we don't want to lose this valuable resource. And that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast in this particular module, is because we want to kind of talk a little bit about telemedicine with our survivors, look at the positive things that have come out of it, look at some of the potential pitfalls, and then try to solve those pitfalls or those problems, and then encourage our survivors to use this wonderful resource way after coronavirus is replaced by whatever avian bird flu or whatever bat shit, you know, flu comes next. You know, we want to kind of help them. So, well, let's talk about 11 things that I think have been amazing with telemedicine. So, Angel, we live in a very interesting location in geography. You know, a lot of times we call each other hillbillies. You know, we're up in the Hudson Valley. There's a lot of dairy farmers, you know, Orange County, Sullivan County, Dutchess County. It's a very, you know, rural area. Yeah. And as such, you know, you would think that we would have absolutely no access to tertiary or high level care with some of the big academic centers. But, even though we live in the middle of nowhere, we really don't, because we're only about an hour and 10 minutes from New York City. So there's Memorial Sloan Kettering, there's NYU, there's Mount Sinai, there's NYU, as I said, Beth Israel, there's Columbia, there's all of these amazing Cornell, there's these amazing hospitals, amazing cancer centers, some of the best in the world. And yet, what do you think when I would recommend a second opinion from one of my patients in Middletown, New York, to just drive an hour and 10 minutes to New York City, 9 times out of 10, what would I hear?
I am not driving to the city.
I'm not driving to the city. Number one is expensive. Number two, you might as well be on the moon, because even though you're only, 20 miles away or something, it's almost like being on a different planet. And a lot of our patients are elderly, and they're, not able, to get people to drive them or even drive themselves. And there is this sort of, what would you say, a fear or a phobia of driving in New York City. I know for a while that I had that. I didn't want to drive in the city. I would park and see caucus. I mean, driving cross town, is not a happy thing at all, especially in rush hour, and there's crazy drivers, and who wants that, right? Just to go and in fairness to the patient, like going down the street for an opinion, could take 2 hours. Going to New York City might be an entire day event, right? You're from 7 a.m. until maybe 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You're tied up. Mm-hmm. So telemedicine opens up, and I'm really happy that the majority, not all of them, but the majority of the tertiary care centers are more open to doing these second opinions by telemedicine, where all the records are transferred and the patients are seen. And it's amazing because now we have the ability of our patients to have these resources through telemedicine that they didn't necessarily have before. It's just unbelievable. The other thing that I wanted to tell you is number two, is that it allows for some of the easier things, like the easy follow-up. Say there's I know a patient, 85 years old, I've been following him for 20 years with prostate cancer, and he literally is not going to die from his prostate cancer. Every year his PSA is perfect. And I tell him, let me just call you, with your PSA level. And he said, no, I want to come every, I want to come and see you every year. I want to go over my PSA. But many people can't do that. And as you get older, to do something for a 5-minute appointment to drive 40 minutes, it just doesn't make any sense. And something that we can do clearly more efficiently for both me as well as for the patient to just do it by telemedicine. Many of the elderly are geographically marginalized or chronically ill. We just got word today that our dog that we talk about every week, who's having medical issues, is going to be having telemedicine with her neurologist. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing, because bringing her to the vet every week every month, takes a lot out of her. So I'm really happy that they were able to consent to that. The other thing is that telemedicine will allow us to have more frequent visits, more follow-ups, to be able to follow up chronic issues or some abnormalities that you might not have time to do in the hustle and bustle of the day. If you have a later telemed, you can kind of take your time and, for you and for the patient, and really use that time effectively and efficiently. You also have to, you have that opportunity to, we talked about my chart. We did an episode on my chart. Well, telemedicine might be a great opportunity for a physician to carve out 5 minutes to give the results of testing. That was one of the biggest problems, is that people were going to their MyCharts before their doctors were getting them the results. And as a result, they were reading these very extensive and complex and, incomprehensible reports, thinking they were dying when they actually weren't. So telehealth might be another opportunity to be able to mitigate that stress and that anxiety with the interpretation of studies. There's also a teaching opportunity. So if patients are, seeing their doctors and they decide they're going to get chemotherapy or getting radiation therapy or getting a certain surgical procedure, it might make a lot of sense for patients to go telemed those teaching sessions, those education sessions of the chemotherapy teaching, the radiation teaching, the Mediport placement teaching, you know, all those types of things. And that could even be asynchronous. So let me take a second and explain that. So telemedicine could either be synchronous, meaning live, real time, or it could be asynchronous, meaning you could have a module like we have on the Croc podcast that then can be used at a later time or at the convenience. And I guess what we do here is we do asynchronous teaching, right, with our podcast. For the people that are listening to us, even on Sunday, we're taping this on Friday night. So even they are asynchronous, even though they might think they're listening to it on Sunday. We're really not there. We're somewhere else, right? So that's called asynchronous telemedicine. And we talked about the teaching. The other thing I want to talk to you about is that telemedicine can connect practices. So we have a big, you know, monolithic medical group called Crystal Run Healthcare. I think in the Fishkill area, they have a big, I don't recall what whether it's called Caremark or something like that. They have a big medical system there. Memorial has several satellites. I think telemedicine could also help connect all of the facilities where I know the oncologists at Crystal Run have a tumor board where the, you know, Dr. Rappaport, who's in, you know, Newburgh, and, you know, Dr. Shah, who might be in Nanuet or whatever, or in Rockland. And then you have some of the guys up in Rock Hill, and then you have people in Middletown. They can present difficult cases to each other utilizing telecommunications, and it really makes everyone better. You could also not only connect practices and tumor boards, you can also utilize expert opinions utilizing telehealth and telecommunications, like pathologists. You can actually have a famous, world famous pathologist. You can FedEx the slides, and then you could actually see the interpretation of the slides while they're doing it right in front of you, you know, getting a microscopic view and getting explanations as to some of the nuances of that particularly challenging case. And that's not only in pathology, it could be in radiology. Everything, almost everything in radiology is teleradiology, where they have someone could be reading films in India or in Nepal or in Antarctica or in Santa Barbara, California. Films are being read 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, you know, utilizing this technology. And I'm noticing also, because of coronavirus, a lot of the support groups that people were attending, you know, face-to-face are now on Zoom. So that's good and bad. And we're going to talk about some of the pitfalls and caveats. But, you know, at least they had access to being able to join a support group. And the support groups may not even be local. You might have a breast cancer support group you like coming out of Portland, Oregon, or coming out of San Antonio, Texas. You know, there might be a leader or a facilitator that you happen to like. The other thing, Angel, think about this. You're a big family guy. I think telemedicine also allows family members to participate more, especially since we've had all those rules with how many people can actually participate or actually come on board or come in to a medical center at once. So you were able to do that. And you could also go through survivorship forms. You can go through all of their, you know, how to help advocate for a survivor. That could all be done by Zoom, by telemedicine, by, you know, by regular audio meetings or whatever. But with anything that's great, there's always a bad side, right? There's always what I call the caveats and the solutions. So number one is that because telemedicine is different, and because you could basically do your visitation in your bunny rabbit slippers and your robe, and because it's sort of informal, I think both the patient and the care team have to be careful that they don't just disregard it or disrespect it. And that's very important. I know we had a series of telemedicines with my father-in-law's doctor, and the televisit would be, say, 6 o'clock. But sometimes we would have to be stuck in the house, and 6 o'clock would go to 7 o'clock, that would go to 8 o'clock, that would go to 9 o'clock. And sometimes the televisit didn't happen for 3 or 4 hours later. Now, it's great that we didn't have to sit in a waiting room, but at the same time, life stopped. Like, do we eat? Do we start cooking? What do we do? You know, you're almost like frozen because, you know, for that exact reason. So you have, and that's on both the patient and the caregiver. You both have to take it very seriously. I actually had a meeting with some of the administrators the other day talking about televisits, and even me, you know, who really tries to take everything really seriously, noticed that I was sometimes missing my mark when my televisits were either I was, because again, you're thinking it's an informal kind of casual type of thing, but it's really not. So the patient has to take it seriously and the doctor has to take it seriously, or the nurse practitioner, and the schedule is the schedule. I mean, whatever it is, that's what it is. Whether someone shows up, you know, forcing action in person or not, they have to be pretty much relegated to the same level. You would agree with that?
Absolutely.
You have to respect the process, the dignity of the process. Also, you have to realize that a lot of our survivors may be elderly. They may not have the wherewithal or the access to video computers. I'm looking at my wife's beautiful computer. It's got this little dot that's a camera, and I could see your pretty face and your Have Faith, Let It Begin jersey and the whole thing. But not everybody has that technology. Some people don't even have internet. Most people have cell phones, but I wouldn't think everybody does. So we have to all stay up to date, both the care team and the patient. You have to stay up to date with the technology, and you have to stay up to date with the hardware, the microphones, the cameras, and the software. You have to realize that there is a learning curve. There's no way around it. But what people used to say is you get better at something by doing it. So practicing it, you know, you do your first televisit and you're terrified. Second one, you're a little better. The third one, and by the time you get to televisit number 100, you're like almost an expert. So, you know, the learning curve, you get better by doing. So just keep doing it. But don't overuse it. It is convenient, but don't get lulled into that. So don't get hypnotized by that ease, because we do lose that human touch. And especially in oncology, it's really important to touch our patients, to examine our patients, to palpate our patients. How else can we judge or be able to ascertain whether something is getting smaller or responding to the therapy? I mean, a person could expose an area on their skin on televisit, but it's not the same as diving in and getting your hands in there and getting dirty. So that's something else that you have to really think about. Your thoughts, Angel Santana?
I mean, I think, you know, when you put everything into perspective, we, as I stated earlier, we were going through all this together. I can't help but think back in the early days when we first were shown the video phone. And we were like, wow, this is the wave of the future. And how many times we watched Back to the Future and all these movies that showed video phone, Total Recall. You know, I can go on and on with the list, right? But here we are. The technology is better and it's evolving. And like you said, there are some good things about telemedicine. There's some not so good things about telemedicine. But you know what? With the more they continue to do it, it gets better. And I think that it's not so much as the doctor's side of it, it's the patient side of it. We as the patient, you as the doctor, have to improve together to make those televisits worth its while, and also allows us the opportunity to stay at home, to stay safe during a pandemic. But also, if you're not feeling well, it'll allow the person to be evaluated, and it doesn't have to be a cancellation. They can still see and talk to their doctor. So I'm all for telemedicine. I think it was there's always something good that comes out of something bad. And I think this is one of those major points.
Excellent. Excellent. Angel, I want to take a moment and thank you for everything you do for us and for our survivors. Have faith, let it begin. Also to the listeners, I also am a co-host, I guess you would say, on Mondays.
Absolutely.
Give us a listen. We have such a great holy bond, and I would love for our survivors to listen to the spiritual podcast that is called Have Faith, Let It Begin. Rod Friedman, thank you for everything you do for us. Have Faith, Let It Begin. I'm sorry, Have Faith, Small Biz Up. I gave you a double kudos there, Angel.
I'll take it.
Don't cut it. Let's keep it. there is no such thing as bad press. To our board of directors, thank you for all your hard work. Michael, John Benzeas, Charlotte Larson, for your amazing generosity and belief in us. And we end each podcast as we end each one the same, because it's so important for us to tell you how important you guys are and how valuable you are and how unbelievably unique you are and how absolutely irreplaceable you are. We absolutely adore you and love you, and we wish you a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God be with you. God bless you. Peace.